This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Hey everyone, it's Estet Herndon, political reporter for the New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent, I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what the New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice. I'm Katie Kingsbury, and I run the New York Times editorial board. Last episode, you heard the board grill Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. This episode, you get to hear what we had to say once Senator Sanders left the room. If you haven't heard the interview with Bernie yet, I recommend you listen to that first. Joining me today to talk about Senator Sanders' interview and the healthcare policies on the primary ballot is board member Janine Interlandi.
I'm Janine Interlandi, and I write about health and science for the board.
Let's start by listening to what happened after Senator Sanders walked out the door.
Hey guys, any surprises?
We didn't get to talk political strategy that much, but I would have liked to have heard a plan. He said that he was struggling to win the nomination, almost joking about it, but what is his plan to actually grow his support, and both with Black voters, but also
older voters,
as he pointed out.
So. And Latino voters and
older. He's not planning to do that. He's planning to mobilize that youth vote, which everybody always plans.
Always say it never happens.
That's right. So he is trafficking in some fantastically inspirational political cliches.
Janine, what were you hoping to ask Senator Sanders about in this interview?
So for all the candidates, I felt this real tension between wanting to ask them about their healthcare policies, because that's been such a big issue in this election, and getting them to think about the components of health that sort of fall outside of whole system reform. This was especially true for Bernie, because he's been a driving force behind the push for universal healthcare and Medicare for all. Healthcare policy is obviously hugely important, but it's taken up a lot of space already, and it's not the only thing that determines health. So for him, I wanted to ask about, you know, his thinking on vaccine policies and tobacco control and deaths of despair.
What did you think of Bernie's performance?
I think he did well enough. I was expecting someone much grumpier, so it really struck me how warm and congenial he came off. He's really, like, energetic and has great vitality, and I think that certainly comes off in the debates, but it was still striking to me to see that in person, especially after the health scare that he had.
Especially because he will be 79 when he would enter office.
Yeah, exactly.
I really find his values very admirable. I agree with many, if not most of them, on a broad level. But the age issue really is concerning to me, and it's still concerning to me. And although his answer was as good an answer as you can give, it's not comforting. You know, when someone who's nearly 80 years old and has just had a heart attack is running to, you know, be the leader of the free world for 4 and possibly 8 years, I just don't see a good end to that. And he can't answer that question other than to say he's going to, you know, bring on a running mate who would not just fulfill needs of diversity, but needs of, say, health and succession to the presidency. I feel like it's a much bigger issue, and it will be a bigger issue if especially if he becomes the nominee.
Were you surprised to hear that the senator doesn't have a workout routine after his health scare from October?
I mean, I don't think I was surprised. One has to imagine that if you're a candidate and you're campaigning, it's really hard to get that in. I mean, I have a hard time and I'm not running for president. But I was concerned by it. You know, you certainly want him, you want to think that he's taking his health very seriously, given that he had this huge health scare. If he can't do it now, like, when will he be able to do it?
What did you think about the fact that he said that he hadn't given a lot of thoughts to vaccines and requiring them?
I was a little surprised and a little disappointed.
What's the history of Medicare for All? How did it get to be such a central part of the Democrats' 2020 campaign?
So Medicare for All, the umbrella term, just universal health care, is something that progressives have been pushing for a really long time. I mean, going back to before World War II, FDR tried to do it, Truman tried to do it, progressives under Johnson tried to do it, and then more recently, Clinton and Obama both tried to do it. It's become central this season for two broad reasons. One is that healthcare helped the Democrats win in the midterms, so they latched onto it. And two is specific candidates like Sanders and Warren took that moment and used it to push Medicare for All specifically. And as their candidacies gained currency and momentum, the cause itself was promoted.
How does Bernie's plan stack up compared to the other candidates to you? What are the other proposals on the table?
Sure. I think it's tough to weigh Bernie's plan specifically because he hasn't put forth anything about how he plans to pay for it or really engaged in the question of how he would get it through Congress. So what trade-offs would he be willing to make? Which are the first things he would sacrifice? Which provisions and which provisions would be deal breakers if they were taken off the table? But having said that, his plan is more comprehensive than the main alternative, which is broadly a public option. Now, a public option is essentially a government-run program that people would have the option to buy into, but it would leave private insurance on the table. Who gets to buy into that option, who has the choice, depends on which candidate and which plan you're talking about. But none of the public options are as comprehensive as Bernie's Medicare for All plan.
Does Senator Sanders support a public option?
So we didn't get to ask him that. I went back and looked at some of his policies and some of the things he's talked about. His initial opposition to something like the public option, you know, which he'll talk about in debates when it comes up, is this that that's just tinkering around the edges. And what you really need to get universal health care and to improve the health care system is whole system reform. So his opposition to the public option is basically that it just doesn't go far enough. Now, having said that, I think he does have a public option provision, and I would, you know, one would have to assume that if he wants reform, if you start really high up here with this Medicare for All, that doesn't mean that you're not going to, you know, secede to something less than that. The goal is to start big and then negotiate your way down to something, you know, that can actually get through Congress.
More from our deliberations after a quick break.
This podcast is supported by Tenderfoot TV. Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where the new podcast To Die For begins. Hosted by Neil Strauss, To Die For takes listeners inside the dark and dangerous world of Russian sexpionage, where targets are seduced for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, the producers of To Live and Die in LA, binge To Die For now on all podcast platforms.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at The New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at The New York Times work on every day, to give you clarity and perspective, and above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to The New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to The Choice. Janine, what healthcare solution do voters seem to want?
You know, per the surveys that have been out, the electorate is almost evenly split. Some want Medicare for All and some prefer a public option. And it really depends on how the question is asked. You know, if you look back, I think 6 months ago, it was like 70% of voters, maybe it was 70% of Democratic voters, support Medicare for All. But if you point out to them that that means they would lose the private insurance that they have, then they oppose it. So I think the electorate is pretty split and pretty confused about these things. And, you know, I think more broadly, people are pretty apathetic. Like, they understand that the healthcare system is broken, but they don't necessarily trust government to create something better. What people want are, like, really basic fixes. They want insulin that's affordable. They want you know, a law that prevents hospitals from engaging in some of these practices that lead to surprise medical billing. And fundamentally, they want an assurance that if they get a horrible disease, they're going to be able to access a reasonable standard of care without going bankrupt.
What does the board think is the best healthcare solution for America?
So the board recognizes healthcare as a human right, which means that we support the goal of ensuring that all people have access to a reasonable standard of healthcare. But I think we remain agnostic on the question of how to get there. Medicare for All certainly has a lot of features that we want to see in any final solution, but we share the electorate's concerns about, one, the political feasibility of getting a plan like that through Congress at this particular moment, and two, frankly, the federal government's ability to manage such a plan fairly.
What about how we would pay for it?
Yeah, and I think that's a big open question, and that's one of the reasons that we have reservations. Like, how do you pay for it, and what trade-offs do you make, and what priorities do you sacrifice to make that the priority? You know, I think that's a long way of saying we don't necessarily know what the right solution is. It might ultimately be Medicare for All, it might be Medicaid for All, and it might be something that no one's thought about or put on the table yet.
Charlie, do you think he knows what an app is?
I'm not.
I wasn't convinced.
Yeah. It's hard because you ask those questions and you think, like, I figured he would think, like, oh, what a waste of my time. But, I mean, it is important. Like, we're, the last election surrounded emails and people yeah. doing the right things with email. Like, these systems matter a lot. I mean, I don't know.
Well, Melissa takes care of it.
And this idea that you can communicate with people through your official account, and that is, you know, the same thing. And I, of course, like, of course I care about this, and of course I understand how to message, but it's, you know, it's not true if he has to understand that people have to tell him a press release is more important than a tweet, and then, you know, your opponent, like, literally completely understands and governs via tweet. It's just...
Right.
For context, we are referring to Melissa Byrne, the senator's digital director. So it sounds like Melissa has a big job.
Yeah.
On one hand, he's clearly taking cybersecurity seriously. He, in a way, it's actually comforting to know that Melissa is out there and making sure that he's paying attention. But it does give me a little pause, and I'm curious what you think as to whether he will really be able to deal with the power structures that Silicon Valley now yield in Washington.
I think it's a fair concern. It's actually one I have about a lot of the candidates, given their age and given that none of these people are digital natives. They are not people that came up with the internet and all of these things. And, you know, I don't know the way around that. I feel like that's a problem for a lot of the leading contenders right now.
Yeah, it'll really come down to surrounding yourself with the really smart people.
Yeah. And you know, to some extent, who you pick for your VP and who you put in your cabinet.
I thought one thing that really stood out to me was his answers were so often similar to what we've heard from President Trump in the past. Things like, yes, he's going to release his full health records when he makes sure they're all full and complete and
yeah.
they're checking out to make sure all the details are there.
Yeah.
It felt very similar to Trump's message around his
taxes.
Returns.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Bernie's health records are Trump's tax records.
Exactly.
And also, you know, he kept saying, you know, when we talked about how would you make your case to the, like, how would you get this through Congress? He has these really progressive ideas. And if the Democrats don't win the Senate with a huge majority, like, a lot of this feels very pie in the sky. And his responses were often, I will take it to the people, or, you know, like, it was just a lot of the same
right.
things that you hear from Trump. I will take my message to the people, and the implication in that is, like, I will just ram it through, which
yes.
is, you know, you have to think about that. Is that really what we want to do at this point?
That's it for Bernie. Come back tomorrow to hear our slightly awkward interview with billionaire philanthropist Tom Steyer. See you tomorrow.
The Choice is produced by At Will Media. Mitch Bluestein, Molly Socha, Ashley Taylor, and Rachel Leitner, with help from Michelle Mason. Mixing by Lauren Gardner and original music by Allison Leighton Brown. Special thanks to Tyson Evans from The New York Times. Our executive producers are Will Malnati from At Will Media and Phoebe Lett from The New York Times. Finally, we want to hear from you. Please rate and review us on the Apple Podcasts app. It'll help more voters find the show.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Temper Adapt Collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.